Welcome to Kidmin Talk, the weekly webcast equipping you in your ministry to kids. Kidmin Talk comes to your computer or mobile device each week, courtesy of Kidology.org, your children's ministry headquarters on the web. Today's Kidmin Talk features guest host Glenn Woods, a former children's pastor and current urban missionary to his neighborhood, with over 30 years' experience working with kids and parents. Today, he will be talking about engaging your neighborhood in mission. This episode is sponsored by Kidology's VBS Follow-Up Kit. Find out more about the amazing VBS Follow-Up Kit and how you can get it for free at the end of this episode. But now, it's time to kick back, relax, and enjoy some more great Kidmin equipping on Kidmin Talk.
Hello everyone, this is Glenn Woods coming at you from Portland, Oregon. So glad to be here to chat with you today. Appreciate the invitation from Kidology and especially from Carl Bastian, who asked me to come and share with you in his absence, and I'm excited to do that. I want to say, before I forget, today's program is brought to you by Kidology's very own VBS follow-up kit. It's a great resource that I had the privilege of participating in developing it. It's a brainchild of Carl's. And basically what it does is help you as a children's leader, a children's pastor, to follow up with families throughout the year. When you have kids that come into your VBS program in the summer, I know that despite our best intentions as leaders, it's very easy to kind of drop the ball or let it slip through the cracks in getting a really effective follow-up to kids. The VBS follow-up kit is a great resource to help you to do that. And what it is a set of templates that can be used as emails or letters that can be sent to kids throughout the year based upon different seasons of the year. And even helping you to gear up and lead up to the following year's VBS. It's adaptable. You can edit it. You can personalize it, brand it for your context, and reword it in a way that you know will communicate best with the people that you're trying to reach. And I really appreciate the kit. It's something that I wish I would have had when I was a children's pastor for 15 years in my context, and it would have been very helpful. So I was excited to participate in doing that. You can go to the show notes and get more details there. There's a link to the kit where you can go to Kidology and purchase it. And also, we're going to be doing a free giveaway to someone who participates in the forums, the forum thread that's linked to this show. And so jump on in and give your feedback, and whether you agree, disagree, whatever, we want to hear from you, and I will be there interacting as well when the show goes live. So we look forward to doing that. That'll be exciting. Now, on to the task at hand. I want to share with you today, from my background and experiences, and particularly moving forward as God is kind of changing my direction in life. Up until the end of 2010, I was a children's pastor here in Portland, and then I made a switch. I resigned, left on good terms, and in fact, I'm back at that church. Several months later, I returned back, but I made a switch because I sensed that God was up to something in me. I didn't know what at the time. I had some general ideas, this crazy idea of being a missionary to the neighborhood, but I didn't know exactly how it was going to look. So today I want to talk to you about going into the margins and engaging your neighborhood in mission. And more on that in a second. A little bit more background about me. I like to think of myself as being kind of like Gandalf in The Hobbit as he began to interact with Bilbo. He was an official disturber of the peace, according to the other hobbits, because he stirred things up a little bit, didn't he? And it kind of upset some of the hobbits, but from Gandalf's point of view, all he did was give Bilbo a nudge out the door. But from a broader perspective, especially on the heels of our experiences and watching Lord of the Rings and reading the books, we know that it had a much greater impact on Hobbiton, on the Shire, on Bilbo and later Frodo, and Samwise Gamgee and Pippin and Merry and all of the hobbits. That little nudge out the door that Gandalf gave, he really was a disturber of the peace, an official one. So my goal in this session is to be a disturber of the peace. Some of you might be a little bit uncomfortable. Not that I'm going to intentionally say anything controversial, but I'm going to challenge you to possibly think and to look at the world, to look at your ministry situation, to look at your life situation, your church situation, from a different perspective. This is a journey I've been on for a number of years. It's not one that I wanted, to be honest, but it is what it is, and it happened, and so I'm going to share part of that with you. Now, my mom, who has passed away, and my dad as well, when they were alive, and especially when they were younger, both had a deep impact on the people that they influenced. My mom worked with children all of her life as a preschool teacher, Sunday school teacher, daycare worker. And when she was younger, college age, she would actually go into the neighborhood of Watts in Los Angeles and do outreach and work with kids in the projects. And they would all come out of the projects screaming as loud as they could, "The Bible Lady's coming! The Bible Lady's coming!" And they'd be so excited. Now, this is before the days of technology like we have today. She would have her flannel graph, and she would have her good old-fashioned King James Bible, because that's all they had back then in her situation. And but she was excited to do so, and they were excited to see her. And that had a deep impact on me, hearing those stories, the time that she spent, and the love that she had for the kids. She wasn't there to do necessarily to do a special project to help those poor kids, and then she did her time and then she would leave. She loved them. She loved the people, and that really impacted me. And the same with my dad. He was a police officer for a number of years. Later, he went into security, but in both professions, he worked with people. And as a police officer, he would arrest people, and you know what? Many of them respected him deeply, despite having to arrest them multiple times. He treated them as human beings. And that, both of those stories, my mom and my dad, set the stage for my worldview and my perspective and how I look at the world around me. And I think that's important moving forward in our conversation today. I truly do have a concern for the world in my neighborhood, particularly the marginalized, children, elderly. I look at myself as becoming a missionary without a title, a position, or any desire for recognition. I'm over all of that. I just want to make a difference with the years that I have remaining, and I believe that's true of you as well. And because I've seen that kind of ethos, that kind of point of view as we've interacted in the forums. Now, moving forward, my context where I'm at now, as I said earlier, I'm back in the church where I was a children's pastor. They allowed me to come back. I'm no longer an ordained minister. I gave some time for them to figure out what they needed to do to bring on new children's directors. But I'm back as an attendee and kind of helping them wrestle with this idea of what it means to do mission in a local neighborhood. For 2 years as a children's pastor there, we had a unique opportunity basically thrown on our lap. Two low-income Section 8 apartment complexes were raised up right on our doorstep, one across the street from us and one right next to us. And so we began to work with kids and with families and doing special events. And I would go across the street and next door and gather kids together, bring them to Vacation Bible School, bring them to our Wednesday night kids program. We had 60, 70 kids, which is pretty much the I would say 90% of the kids in those apartments were participating in some form in our children's ministry programming. And but that's in the history. The current situation is we have a lot of ground to cover and to gain. But I'm coming at it now from a different point of view. Rather than simply trying to get them to come to us, to our events and our programming, although they're certainly welcome, I'm looking at challenging the church to go to them, not on our terms, but on their terms, and learning how to do life with them. I'm an apartment dweller myself. I live about 2 miles from one of the most crime-ridden neighborhoods in the city. It's a very nice apartment complex where I live, in a quiet, safe, gated community. But I'm not far from where the bullets are flying. In fact, there's a train that goes right behind my apartment, a MAX train. I don't know what they call it in other parts of the country, but basically it's a ferry service that takes people throughout the city. And a lot of the gangs ride those trains to go do what they're going to do. So I'm not far from all that. The church is about 8 miles from me. It's in southeast Portland, and it's not a popular area of town. In fact, it's known as Felony Flats throughout the city. It's often the punchline of derisive jokes. And but that's our ministry. That's our mission field. We had an opportunity several years ago to actually move our church facility elsewhere, but we chose not to. We chose to stay right there because we believe that's where God was calling us. And that's the reason why I asked permission to go back to that church and to be a part of the church family again, this time without the burden of leading a program or children's ministry, but the specific focus of figuring out what it means to be missionaries in that community. Now, I should add that this material that I'm sharing with you is not based necessarily on any great success that I've had in ministry, but it truly is based upon a paradigm shift in my thinking and in my heart, in what I believe Jesus is doing in me, taking me down into the margins, not to help, quote-unquote, those poor people, but to be a part of their lives, to do life with them as an equal, as someone who can learn from them just as they may be able to learn from me. It's a multicultural setting that I'm in, people from a variety of religions, ethnicities, backgrounds from all over the world, multiple languages, everything from Arabic to Vietnamese to Spanish and Russian and so on, religions such as Buddhism, Islam, Roman Catholic, there are some evangelical Christians, but it's largely an unchurched neighborhood in a largely unchurched city. Portland is one of the least church cities in the United States of America. I won't try to make a claim that it's the least because everybody else tries to make that same claim. I do know demographically it's one of the least church cities. And frankly, although there are many great churches in the area, we're not doing a good job of reaching those who likely on their own, left to their own devices, they will likely never step foot inside of a church. What we're doing is not working. You can have all the great events you want, great programming, great facilities, exciting events, wonderful teachers and children's ministers and puppets and whatever you want to do. But there's a lot of people that will never walk in. Now, the same is true in any part of the country. There are always going to be a certain percentage of people who will not respond to a glossy flyer. They will not respond to any type of mailer or door-to-door outreach or even a special event. They just won't for a variety of reasons. Those are the cheap people that Jesus misses most. Those are the people that we're not reaching. So what do we do about it? That's the question. That's the struggle, the challenge that I've been wrestling with for a number of years. And I want to share some ideas with you. I'll tell you, I've traded in a desire for professional and financial success because duty to Christ's mission demands it of me. I can no longer go on trying to build the skills and the background and the resume in order to get a job somewhere as a professional children's pastor. I have nothing against people that do. I think it's wonderful. I learn from people. I have many friends that are full-time children's pastors. I respect what you do. You know, the scale on which you do it, the class and the professionalism, the authentic life-changing ministry that you do. But for my part, that's not me. I've come to realize I've got to be obedient to what God's calling me to do, and that is to go into the margins, specifically to reach neighborhoods and to reach people that aren't being reached with the wonderful ministry initiatives that go on church campuses. They're just not going to come to campus, at least not initially. Why is that? Why won't they come? I think it's because of a lack of relationship. I think it's because people are so bombarded with marketing. They're so bombarded with personal bias. They're so bombarded with some preconceptions as to what Christians are, particularly evangelical Christians in American culture. Really have an increasingly bad name right now. A lot of it has to do with media, a lot of it has to do with TV, and that's not the discussion for today, but it's an obstacle that we have to overcome, and I think the way to do that is through personal relationship. I'll give you an example, I'll tell you a story. A couple years ago when I was still on staff at the church, I was outside, a very hot summer day, and a Muslim woman and her children from next door were walking, and she asked me for a cup of water. Now, do you realize the significance of that? I had visions in my mind of Jesus and a woman at the well. It was that kind of a dynamic. Of course, I'm not Jesus, and she wasn't the woman at the well. She was actually asking me for water. But it was that kind of a dissonance, that kind of a, and at the same time, a synergy, recognizing in the moment that something special was going on. And then, of course, I granted her request. I got her a drink of water, or actually her children a drink of water, and she thanked me, and we parted ways. I didn't try to witness to them. I didn't try to preach to them, give them a tract or anything. I just, for a few moments, did life with them as human being to human being. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And I think the challenge is, in getting to that point, to do life with people, I think we need to, as children's ministry leaders, whether you're on staff or whether you're like me, someone who's a volunteer in a church and helping in a local congregation, we need to regain this mindset of being shepherds, more of a shepherd and less of a manager of systems. Systems are important. I understand that, particularly in traditional church settings, but oftentimes we manage systems at the expense of shepherding, or we delegate shepherding. It's a type of thing where we delegate it in such a way that it becomes everybody's responsibility, so nobody does it. Nobody spends time with people who need that time spent with them. And that's true with those that are within the church context, that are regular attenders, where they end up not getting shepherded, and then much less anybody that's outside the context, like what we're talking about today. And I think what helps, in my situation anyway, is a focus on scaling down rather than scaling up. That is, putting less emphasis on huge events and more emphasis on either events or opportunities or interactions that are on a smaller scale that allow for more authentic personal interaction, that allow others, people outside the faith, to see us as human beings. And this is true for children. This is true for adults. You'll notice that I have been talking more generally, really emphasizing moms and dads as well as kids. And also grandparents, you know, it doesn't matter how old they are. This all comes down to doing life with people. And when you do life with people, you have to do it with your whole family. If you go to a neighborhood, such as an apartment community, as I'm doing, if you focus only on kids, that's kind of weird. People are going to call the police. Rightly so. We really have to focus on doing life with the whole family so that people can get to know us, so that we will have accountability, so that those relationships will be established across generations. In my situation, I'm slowly becoming friends with this Muslim family I referred to. Mom, dad, and the kids, and not a whole lot of deep conversations yet, but just a friendly hello, how are you doing, how was your day, just simple stuff. Find the common ground, meet them where they're at. I suggest that we should challenge the typical status quo, the underlying systemic problems which prevent us from really being able to shepherd our own people as well as people in the community, reaching out to them and developing relationships with them. There's been a lot of writing lately in the children's ministry world. I know Craig Jutula came out with a book. I can't remember the title right now. I know Jim Weidman and his friends came out with another book. I believe it's called Eric Trapp. I've not read that one, although I did purchase it recently, having to do, as I understand it, with margin in life. There are a number of other books that have been out for a while, too. Probably the most important one, in my view, the seminal book on margin, on reclaiming your life, as it were, is by Dr. Richard Swenson. His last name is spelled S-W-E-N-S-O-N. We'll have it on the show page. He's a medical doctor, actually, and he's the author of two books in particular. There's some others that have come out more recently, but the two most important ones that I'm aware of, one is actually entitled Margin as the main title, then there's a lot longer subtitle, and the second one is called The Overload Syndrome. And he comes at it from a medical perspective, a Christian perspective, a practical life perspective. And this is something I bring this up because it's one of the catalysts that caused me to make some changes, recognizing how overloaded I was in my life in trying to maintain and grow systems that were unsustainable, particularly in a declining church that I was in with a declining volunteer base. It became very difficult to do that, and so I had to make some decisions about my life and how I was going to adjust. And Richard Swenson is very helpful in helping think through that. He has a lot of technical language in there. It's not necessarily an easy read, but it's an important read, and I do highly recommend it. You know, it's really about getting real with life. If we want to reach out into the neighborhood, we really need to, I really need to get real with God and get real with others. And in so doing, that's going to help me to be more real with the people I'm trying to reach out to. Because you know what? They can spot a fake. Now, by fake, I don't mean someone that's necessarily someone that's being a false teacher or doing something dumb. By fake, I mean someone who's so overloaded, they have no room for life, they're stressed out, and they're not living what they preach. Not necessarily being in overt sin, but just, you know, where's the peace in life? Where's this joy that you speak of? And I can relate to that. And as I've more and more, as I interact with people who are in poverty, who are in addictions, who are in religions that are completely opposed to Christ, or in no religion at all, atheistic or agnostic, I find that for each one of them, even though there are major differences, this is true for adults, and it can also be true for kids because they're influenced by adults. For each one of them, I can find common ground. And that's really something I try to do. And this is something I want to be a major take-home as you think about what we're discussing. Try to find common ground with people. If it's with kids, it may be that they like to shoot a basketball through the hoop. I got a large group of kids near the church that likes basketball, so that's one way that I connect with them. It could be something else. Maybe they like BMX biking, or maybe they like skateboarding. Who knows? Find common ground. Discover the felt needs and meet them. And don't meet them in a way that you're the hero and you're going to rescue them and make everything better. Meet them together. Don't let it be a us versus them. Let it be a us. That is, work together with the community, your neighborhood, and let's figure out how to make this thing better together. Is there a widow in the neighboring house that's hurting? Let's meet our needs together. You don't have to be a Christian to feed someone. You can be a Muslim and feed someone. Do it together. Does that make sense? Yeah, I'd love to hear your feedback on that. It's this whole idea, what does it take to belong to a certain degree, to the community? Does someone, this is, now we're getting into theological terms, but does someone have to be a full believer in Christian orthodoxy in order to work with you to feed someone or to mow someone's lawn or to have a nice neighborhood picnic for the whole neighborhood? Think about that. Do life with people. Do life with people. Let them get to know you, the real you. Not the professional you, the real you. Even when you screw up. I hope it's okay if I say that. But let them see the real you, who you really are. Leave the tracts and the literature, the advertising, the marketing at home or in the church office. Go out and just be the real you. Invite others. Don't do it by yourself. Invite others along with you. Find collaborators within the apartment complex who may be Christians. Work alongside them. Get to know people. Hang out. Share some watermelon with people on a hot summer night. I did that one time. One of the Spanish-speaking families, she couldn't speak any English at all, but she was appreciating what I was, what we were doing with her kids, and so she offered me some watermelon. It was such a gracious gesture, and I was very thankful. And as I began to eat it, she said, "Oh," in her language, I can't speak Spanish, but she said, wait, and she went and got this special powder or something, and she wanted to pour it on, and so I had a decision to make. I could either say, "Oh, no, I just want my watermelon," but instead, I took a risk and said, "Okay, put it on," and she did, and boy, was it hot. But you know what? We made a connection. She even said, "Take the dish home with you," through her child who was translating. "Take the dish home with you," and I did, and I brought it back the next week when I saw them again, and there was a connection there. We were doing life together. Nothing fancy, no special tricks to pull out of the tool belt, just being real. And through that process, it's going to become less about us going to them to help them, and it's going to be more about us going to them to learn how to be us together as God intended. And through that, there are going to be opportunities to share your faith. They're going to ask of the hope within you, because you know what? They're going to begin to trust you. They're going to begin to realize that you're not there to turn their world upside down, even though you are, from a certain point of view, for Jesus. You know, you want them to know Jesus, but you're not there to upset things. You're there just to love them. They're going to sense that. Have you ever thought about the 99 sheep and the one that went astray, and how Jesus left the 99 to go find the one? Have you ever had that gnawing feeling that Jesus wasn't only talking about backsliders someone who was ran away from the faith or was never in the faith, but they're off in the distance? Think about the people that Jesus misses most, the people in the margins who are not in the household of the faith, they're not influenced by it, they don't have a Christian worldview, they likely have never read the Bible, although they probably have one on their shelf, maybe not. They'll never respond to your marketing material. They're that one. Are you willing to go outside of your comfort zone and reach that one, whatever it takes? Turning the status quo on its head. The pressure to do events, to draw a bunch of kids to your campus, to have programming for families and this and that. Believe me, I understand the pressures that you face as children's ministry leaders. But are you willing to lead your people, not doing it on your own, but lead your people in beginning to look at your neighborhood differently? The average church in America is a commuter church. That is, people get in their cars, they drive from a distance to go to a church campus with people that are of like mind, worship together, get back in their cars, go home, and call it good until the next time they meet. What about the neighborhood? There are some really cool ministries here in the Portland area I'd like to bring to your attention, and these links will be on the show page, but one of them is CompassionConnect.com. It's an apartment initiative of reaching out to people in local low-income apartments, typically Section 8 housing, as I'm reaching out to. I'm not personally connected with them, although they have been on my radar, but they do this, a great ministry where they have people that go in, live in the apartments, do life with people, and there have been some fantastic news reports of gang activity, drug activity, prostitution activity being eradicated through inside out ministry, partly having to do with Compassion Connect, but also cooperation with the local police force, with apartment management, with an owner that realizes, apartment owner that realizes needs to get re-engaged. Typically they live in Arizona and this is their retirement income, and so they get re-engaged. Think about how you can cooperate with local police, with apartment management, with owners of apartments, with people that live within the apartments. Don't just go there and try to present a program or a ministry. That's great, but get engaged with people. Have conversations. Listen. Listen well. Listen well. Evangelical Christians don't have the greatest reputation in the world for listening well. I include myself in that, but I'm learning. I'm learning to listen well. And that's how you're going to make an impact on kids, on moms and dads, on uncles and aunts, on widows and orphans, on single moms, on single men and women who have no families. It becomes more than just about children's ministry. It becomes an initiative to transform a neighborhood. That's my passion. I believe that's Jesus' passion, to touch everyone. As a single person, no family of my own, in an apartment complex, I know how profoundly lonely it can be with no one to connect to. No one. Unless I may take initiative and go out and connect with people, which is what I have to do. But there's no one trying to connect with me. Surely, I'm not the only one. Thanks so much for having me today. I pray that this is a blessing to you, and I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you. Take baby steps. Think about what we've worked through this during this session, and recognize that you are making a difference, and you can continue to make a difference in profoundly powerful ways as Jesus uses you in your context. Don't be discouraged. Be encouraged. God's not finished with your church. God's not finished with you. God's not finished with your neighborhood. He loves your church. He loves you. He loves your neighborhood and the people, and especially those that he misses most. Thanks so much. God bless you. You have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on Kidmin Talk. Remember, this episode was sponsored by Kidology.org's amazing VBS follow-up kit. You can get the VBS follow-up kit free with any VBS purchase from Kidology. But you better hurry, because this offer expires June 1st. You can always talk about Kidmin Talk on the Kidology forums or via Twitter. Until next time, see you on Kidology.org.